strange thing, man, that we've only known each other for a little bit, but it seems like we've known each other forever.
It does.
It's wild how that happens.
Was it 2018?
Yeah.
November. Hey, Michael, how's it going? Michael Stucker is here.
Stucker, you know, great story, man. Stucker's son. Stucker sent me a audio clip of his son playing the guitar the other night. It sounded great, which really, really made my whole freaking year, because I gave the kid a guitar when he started taking lessons from me, and he sounded awesome.
That's amazing.
Made my year, awesome. Man. It really did. So
Crystal is here.
There's my sissy. Yeah, I've noticed without the hat how much gray I have in my beard. My favorite hat that I've worn for 20 years or better is injured right now because of my new dog.
Jake?
Yeah, Jake.
I love Jake.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Two different colored eyes.
I'm sure he's going to be a lot bigger because his paws are so huge. You know, I haven't seen him in, I don't know, it's been a month since I've been there. I'm sure.
He's a truck. He's bigger than Emma now.
Oh my, really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a chunk, man. He's actually next to my feet right now.
So what is his breed? I know it's a mix. What is it?
He's a mix between Australian Shepherd and a Pit Bull and a Boxer, which makes for a pretty interesting look because he has charcoal colored fur. It's like silver and gray and black, and he has a brown eye and a bright blue eye.
Yeah, I know that looking into his eyes is very disconcerting.
Yeah, he's a pretty wild looking dog. And it's funny because he has this one eye, the brown eye looks like all soft and docile and loving. And then the bright blue eye is like a serial killer eye. It just like looks right through you. So he's like two different dogs wrapped up into one. But I love him to death, man. He's really good natured.
Yeah. He's very affectionate based on. So right now, we've got, and I think you've got it too, we've got a winter weather. I mean, there's snow on the ground here in Nashville, which I've been living here for just over three years, and we've had dustings, but I've never had this much snow.
Yeah, we're covered in ice right now. It's not even really snow, it's just ice.
And the city is pretty much shut down. I mean, I eat out a lot. You know, I live by myself. I cook occasionally, but, you know, I go out for the food and also, you know, interact with people because it's no fun cooking and eating by yourself,
sure.
You know, in an empty house. So, you know, when I go to Waffle House, they know me. They know what I want to order. Same thing at First Watch, which are two of my main breakfast places. And Waffle House now, you can't sit down in there. They'll do takeout, but they won't let you sit down. When I drive there, I take my pickup, my four-wheel drive, because of the roads. And there's nobody on the roads. Nobody at all. Well, Nashville, I mean, when I first came here, I made fun of Nashville drivers when it came to winter. I still make fun of Nashville drivers, but not related to winter. Just in general, Nashville drivers are the worst collectively, but
I agree.
But there is an issue. There's a couple of things different in South Dakota. First of all, like Sunday, church was canceled because it was just ice. And I actually tried to go to breakfast. I couldn't even get out of the development because it was just sheer ice. Now, the interesting thing about the physics, maybe somebody could write this. See, in South Dakota, we usually get snow and we don't have the hills that you have here. That's the one thing I didn't notice. I thought it made so much fun. Why do you shut everything down here? But, you know, in South Dakota, it's all flat. So the hills really make it different. But then you get some snow on top of that, and that changes the dynamics of it, and suddenly it becomes much more drivable. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And today, but people, I think, don't notice the difference. And I'm used to driving in South Dakota with, you know, 6 inches of snow on the ground that's packed down. And I know how to drive on that. And I'm not fazed at all. But people treat that, apparently, by the lack of people on the road, is the same as the sheet of ice. Those are two different, completely different conditions. It's like saying water and alcohol are wet, but if you drink them, they completely different responses. How is that for ad hoc analogy?
You know, around here, is you got to look out for young men with four-wheel drive pickup trucks because they're convinced that they can stop on a dime. And, you know, four-wheel drive helps you get out of places. It doesn't help you stop. And so it's, you know, being overly confident in this part of the country is one of the bigger.
My dad, you know, we'd go out, we'd spend a lot of time off-road, you know, checking cows or, you know, chopping ice. You'd have to go to the dugout and chop the ice every day so that cows could drink in the pasture. Spent a lot of time driving in pasture with snow on the ground. And there were, I don't know how many times, but I got to the point where I learned to expect it. Suddenly we'd get stuck and we couldn't move. And then he'd put it into four-wheel drive. So his technique was to go until you get stuck in two-wheel drive.
Right.
And then you use the four-wheel drive as your get out of jail card. And it worked every time. I mean, you don't drive into a snowbank. I mean, but that actually was really smart.
Man, I went out yesterday, dude, and I'm not sure what percentage of the time I was even driving on the road. Like, no joke. I couldn't even see what was road and what wasn't. It was just all white, and nobody was out. And I went out because I had some things I had to take care of. And it was just guesswork. It's like, I think I'm on the road, hope I'm on the road, nothing's stopping. You know what I mean? I think I'm good.
Just because everything was covered in snow or the visibility was bad?
Yeah.
Was the visibility bad?
Everything was covered.
But you could see in front of you.
Oh, I could see in front of me.
It wasn't like a blizzard condition.
Yeah, I just couldn't tell what was what on the road. But all that being said, it wasn't near as bad as what they had predicted it to be. I mean, we were supposed to get like 10 inches, and it's not even close to that. We're supposed to get more Thursday, though.
Well, I'm ready for it to go back to normal.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, I was born and raised in South Dakota, but I don't like that cold weather. It's right. So easy, I got acclimated for it. You know.
Well, it's a weird thing, man. When I was a little kid, it seemed like every winter was like this. And we just haven't had one for so long. But.
Well, when I was a kid, we got so much snow that you could change the light bulbs in the top of the yard light without a ladder. Just climb to the top of the snowbank. I think it was 68. Wow. 68. It was a big, 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 big snow year. So... yeah, I've been around a few winters. But yeah, and then Texas. Texas is just, they're not prepared for all the, our infrastructure is so delicate.
Fragile, yeah.
Fragile. Yeah. That's the right word, not delicate. And I've been thinking now about, I've thought for a couple of years now about getting one of those generators. You can get a generator and they install it and it's maybe $5,000. I don't know how many kilowatts that'll produce, but at least keep the bare necessities on your house going. But it's fueled by natural gas. And let's say there was a complete catastrophe and natural gas is going to stop flowing because they need electric power to power that. So now my latest idea is, you know, Elon Musk's batteries, they're installing those batteries in your garage and putting solar on the roof, and you can charge those batteries using your solar, but the batteries, you know, if they make a big enough battery, you can probably last a few days. You know, if you put enough battery juice in there, a big enough battery, and you know, you don't turn everything on, you stay in one room. And I think that would be, you don't have to rely on the natural gas. I think that would be a safer way of trying to, because there's been, I've only been here 3 years and I've already had, I think, three outages, power outages of multiple days. Well, then there was the internet outage. Then there was the internet outage when the guy blew himself up. That was just the internet. But I mean, I was talking about this, thinking about this today. I mean, I need electricity and I need internet. I need that every day.
Sure.
To do my job, to do my music, to check my, and both of those things are necessary. Now, I can't do anything about the internet, but I mean, if right now it'd be more important to have power because you'd be freezing if you didn't have power or. So how is your house heated? Is it electric?
It's gas.
Natural gas.
Natural gas.
See, a lot of homes out in South Dakota would be propane. Now that's, you know, you have your big tank in the back. As long as the tank is full, you fill it up and it usually lasts in the all country. Winter. What's that?
There's a lot of that around here too in the country.
You know, then you don't have to worry about propane service being interrupted. You got your tank. I mean, you still need gas. I guess you need some power, but you have a little generator to give it enough electricity to fire the fans and whatever. I mean, you need a little fire. I don't think the propane will run without electricity, even though it's the energy comes for the heat comes from the propane. Well, a propane furnace, I think it needs heat to do the fan, right? A little heat. It needs a little bit of electricity, not a lot, enough to maybe have a small little generator, but if you could use the heat for their propane, that's probably the safest in a disaster because they would usually, a tank's big enough, it'll last an entire winter in South Dakota. That's, you know, minus 15, 20 degrees. So a propane tank is usually sized that you fill it up in the fall or sometime in the winter or in the summer, and it'll last through the entire winter. So that would be the most safe. And then if you need electric, I mean, if power went out completely, I remember one time in the city of Willow Lake, where my plant was, my processing plant, the power was out for 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. They had some serious storms that came in, and a lot of those lines are above ground, and you get ice on those, and then the wind blows like that and tears down, takes down an entire many miles, and it takes them a long time to get it rebuilt and back up and running so you have power. Yeah, in Willow Lake, I think it was 3 weeks, didn't have power.
Yeah, we went about 12 years ago, 11 or 12 years ago. We had hurricane-level winds in Madison and lots of trees down, and there was a transformer that was down in my backyard, and I didn't have power for 16 days.
Wow.
Well, and the funny thing about it, the thing that I remember the most about it is that both Memphis and Marshall were really, really little. And both of them were still, you know, on the bottle. They were still taking a bottle of infant formula. And the thing that stuck out to me the most is somebody that Christmas prior to that storm happening, somebody gave me a bottle warmer that plugged into a car lighter.
Oh my gosh.
And I don't remember who gave it to me, if it was like an aunt or a cousin or somebody like that.
That was a lifesaver, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. And it's funny because I remember when I got it thinking, I'm never going to use this. When am I ever going to need this thing? And it was like solid gold when the power went out. I was like, thank God I have this, you know? But yeah, I mean, we get so comfortable with all of the anemones that we have now. We tend to take so many things for granted. And, you know, it's as simple as that. The power grid goes out and it's just going to progressively get harder and harder as generations become more acclimated to always having those anemones. It's harder for them to adapt. You know,
well, like I said, the power has been out for multiple days here in my home at least three times in the 3 years I've been here. One time I remember I went to Murfreesboro, which is only 30 miles away, and I stayed in a hotel during that time. And none of them were in the when it was cold out. So it was always warmer. So you didn't have to worry about freezing, you know, just or uncomfortable because you didn't have air conditioning, perhaps. But
we do have a fireplace, man. I can always fall back on that in a pinch.
Right, but you need wood.
Yeah.
You don't probably keep wood. Do you have a supply?
I have a huge pile of wood out in my yard.
Yeah, you do have a huge pile. Yeah, you do.
Yep. Because Katie and I like to burn it in the summer. We have our little bonfires out there pretty much nightly.
Well, that is actually there's a fallback right there. You know, that actually is something that I think the next home that I buy. I mean, I've always loved a fireplace.
It's the best
real fireplace.
Man, it's the best heat there is.
Yeah. I had a house in Delaware that had two fireplaces in it. One in the family room and one in the master bedroom. And those are the days.
Yeah, my father always burnt wood. And it's like, if you're not used to it, it's hard not to fall asleep when you get in that environment and feel that kind of heat. It's just like, oh man, what's happening? You know,
it feels just good.
It does. It really does. It just makes you want to lay down and fall asleep.
But yeah, that's a good backup. You can always, having a real fireplace that functions. I mean, because I think it's important to have these backups because,
well, most people don't realize how fragile the energy grid really is, how amazing it is that they're consistently providing us with that. You know, most people think, oh, that can't go out. And then when it goes out, everybody freaks. Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is it's a miracle that it's on as frequently as it is.
Right, right, right.
And most people just aren't ready for it. I mean, I couldn't imagine my kids, nothing against them, but I couldn't imagine 10 years when they're out on their own. If the power goes out, they're going to be lost.
Yeah.
And that's just going to get, that's just going to get harder.
Well, what do you think of my idea of the solar with the batteries as a?
Yeah, it's probably a great idea. Well, you remember the guy came to my house to try to sell us the solar panels?
I think I was there, yeah.
It was funny. He showed up to try to sell me solar panels, and then he came in the house and sat down at my kitchen table. And he's like, could you put a mask on? It's like, dude, you showed up at my house, man. You're in my house at my kitchen table.
I think I had a call. Was I in my car? I think I had a call.
Tony Robbins. Yeah, you were watching the Tony Robbins thing when Tony Robbins did the free thing. You went out and took a call, and I was sitting there with dude, and he's trying to sell me solar panels. And he's like, sir, I'd appreciate it if you could put a mask on. I'm like, dude, you're in my house. You know, you showed up.
So what was his program? I mean, I did make a mistake. I mean, I'm interested in it and I would like to learn about it, but I am allergic to high pressure sales.
Yeah, me too.
I'm just very allergic to that. And
yeah, I don't like it either.
And I made the mistake. I think it's a mistake, but there was a link. Now, you know, your phone number is so important. I protect my phone number. And I know you've taken some steps to do that as well, because your phone number is more valuable actually in 2021 if you're the typical, I mean, not if you're off the grid Eric, like the guy we bought that property from who doesn't even have a forwarding address. That I'm not talking about people like that. I'm talking about the average person who has their phone number connected to their bank account. They check their bank balance. I do. You can do almost everything through your phone number. And a lot of things are like, if you log into your bank account, if it's not on the app on your phone, it's a double security thing where it sends me a text message. And in fact, a little bit of a digression, but I heard about there are people that are trying to, if they try to hack into your bank account, they are now going to the point where they are, if they know the carrier, I mean, never tell anyone, a stranger, who your carrier is, because that's a secret piece of information. If they know who your carrier is, you know, whether it's, what are the carriers? Verizon, Sprint,
AT&T.
So if they know which carrier you have, that is a key piece of information that will tell them. Then they can try to call them and pretend like they are you and get that phone switched to, so it doesn't, you don't control it anymore. It's another phone, another SIM card or whatever it is. And there have been people doing that. That's a pretty advanced criminal enterprise, but there are people doing it. So your phone number is very important. And so I try to keep that safe. So I have a burner app on my phone that I will give them a number that is really a burner app or an app. It's an app. It's called Burner, but it's and it has another phone number, functions just like another phone number. But that way you can get texts, you can call people, people can call you, but it's not your main number.
Right.
And I did, there was an advertisement for solar on Instagram, and they said, enter in your information about if you're suitable for solar, if your address suit fits solar. And I entered in that burner number. They have called that number, because I've called, it's the same area code. The number that's being, that they're calling from changes, but it's only a few digits off, so it's the same company. They call that number, they call my burner number, which doesn't ring. Thank God it doesn't ring into my main phone. It just doesn't ring, you know, it just, I have to call them back. They call my burner number 10, 15 times a day, trying to get me to do solar. Now, I don't want to do business with that company because I'm afraid it's going to be high pressure. So if there's a way that I could find out the details about it without talking to this company or right. another company that's not going to be, I mean, if you got that much salesmanship time out there that they call a number so many times, that's going to be high pressure sales when they do get you on the phone.
Absolutely.
How was this guy in your living room? What was his shtick?
He was pretty lax. I mean, all in all, he was sort of hell-bent on the mask thing, but...
Which had nothing to do with what he was trying to sell.
No, but he was pretty lax. I mean, he was cool. I do business with him. If it was one of those things that I thought that we would be in this particular property for another 5 to 10 years, I probably would have pulled the trigger on what he was offering. I think
apparently there are all kinds of programs now that you can.
Well, it's just a little bit more money on the front end. You know, if your roof's in good shape, you get the solar panels and they work it out to where there's no huge lump sum up front. You can pay it by the month. And essentially, I mean, the shorthand version of it is this. Your electric bill is going to be higher for like 2 or 3 years, and then it's going to be next to nothing forever. Really. So, I mean, if you plan on staying in a property for 5 years, there's zero reason not to switch over to solar panels if the roof's in good shape.
Now, did it include a battery system?
Yep. And they have to have a place to put the battery system inside.
They normally put it in the garage. They normally put it in a garage, right?
Yeah, they were going to put it in a closet in here because I have that closet in the hallway. But I was, you know, I was sold pretty much before he really got through a sales pitch. And much like you, I'm really impatient with that kind of thing. And I was just like, wrap it up, dude. You know what I mean? Get your pitch over and tell me the numbers. What are the numbers? And of course, he had this whole like 30 item skit presentation that he had to go through. And I'm like, man, I'm not trying to be rude. I know this is what you're supposed to do. I'm just telling you, like, my decision is going to be based on numbers. So just show me the numbers. And he's like, and we're sponsored by these people. And these, and I'm like, I don't care. Just show me the numbers.
That kind of a presentation is not cut out for selling to drivers.
No, not at all.
To drivers, which I am, very focused on time.
Right.
Tell me the bottom line. But those presentations will spend half hour, 45 minutes, giving you all the sales pitch and then thinking that you're getting so enamored that you don't care what the price is.
Right, exactly. And it's, you know, to a driver mindset, then you've probably made your decision before the guy even started, and you just want to know what the numbers are. And that's what I was trying to explain to this cat. I was like, this is all math to me. Like, how long is it going to take for me to see the returns from this investment? And it was just a little bit longer than what I was comfortable with, because I couldn't say for sure that we would be at this property for that much longer. All that being said, what they were offering, I feel like, was a great product, and the numbers were right. If you're going to be, you know, living at a property for 5 years or longer, I think everybody should move.
So what was the upfront lump sum requirement that they had?
It wasn't much.
I mean, how much was it? Was it four figures?
I want to say that the electric bill was going to go from, like, don't quote me on this because this is a pretty foggy memory, but I want to say that our electric bill was going to go from being like $160 a month to being like $300 a month for a couple years.
How about any upfront installation cost? No.
They could roll it all. They could roll into kind of a proration sort of thing.
Yeah. It's like when you go to AT&T and get a phone, or Verizon, get a phone, and you pay for it monthly. Same kind of thing, prorated.
You
can't, like, renege on it because.
Yeah, you don't realize you just gave them $5,000 because they're like, it's only $80 a month until you.
Well, I'm really interested in it. The savings to me is secondary. It's actually the security issue.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, I'm not talking about burglar security. I'm talking about you'd have that battery. I mean, if I ever had a 2-day outage, and the outages are going to continue to happen. Thank God it didn't happen during this cold snap. Mm-hmm. But it's happened 3 times that were multiple days in the last 3 years. So the probability is, if that extrapolation continues, every year we're going to have a multi-day outage.
I had a tenant call me today at like 5:00, power's out. And you just stop everything. You know what I mean? Be right there. So I think you're absolutely right in your line of thinking that anything you can do to protect against that is really, really smart. And even though it's not about the savings to you, you'd be money ahead to do it, because the numbers that I had worked out on the solar thing, it was essentially after 3 years, you don't really have an electric bill. You do, but it's nothing.
Well, there's a lot of different programs, because I was reading an article about it, and it depends on what utility company you have. Now, these battery backups, they can be computer controlled, and they can either be completely, the utility company can either draw from them during peak times, or they can be isolated from that, just the backup. So in the case of if the power utility can draw from them, then it might be depleted just when you need it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, but the utility, if they got 1,000 homes, if they could draw from them and they got 1,000 homes to have these, the article was saying, suddenly, and they can draw from it during peak times. Let's say, now in Texas is a peak time. And if they had a bunch of homes with these batteries and they were able to draw from it, they could draw from it. Well, I mean, I guess it's, they were talking about it, a typical air conditioning. Your normal outage is air conditioning, summer, you know, when it's really hot in the middle of the day, and then it's cool down in the evening. But this cold snap is a little different. It doesn't really change. I mean, yes, it gets colder at night, but it's cold during the day too. I mean, so you don't really have the.
It doesn't let up on the.
It doesn't let up. So where that really works is when you for heat, which is normally when grids go overloaded, is in July, when the heat becomes unbearable and everybody's running the AC. That is typically when, you know, this cold snap is really once in a how many decades? I mean, it's very rare, I feel. I know there's articles about it, but generally most of the overages is because of heat. And then if you did have that, the utility could draw from all of these batteries during the peak times, which is in the middle of the day, and then they could recharge it when the evening, when it cools off. And that would be a huge advantage to the utilities, that they wouldn't have to have all this surge capacity. And so it helps them out as well. But would it meet my need if I allowed the utility to draw from it? It wouldn't. They could deplete it just when I need it the most, and then they go offline, and there I am. And the whole reason I put it in, it's depleted. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't know if you can choose, but there are different programs depending on the utility company you have and maybe which type of a system you choose. So, you know, I know solar, typically you can sell your power back to the utility. And that was before the batteries became a thing. So I don't know if that's still, but normally if like you're paying 6 cents, I don't know what the rates are. If you're paying 6 cents, but they pay you two, I mean, they're not going to pay you what you have to pay for it. You're really losing money. So the best way to, if you can store it, which the batteries now, the technology is there. I had an idea, actually had a dream, a very vivid dream of this huge 20-foot diameter flywheel. Did I ever tell you about this?
No, but if this is something that should be patented, we might want to not talk about it.
No, it's not that unique. You know, other people are doing it, and it doesn't work as well as batteries, I don't think. But basically, it is a you have to store the energy somehow. And there are flywheel installations, but the ones that I've talked to, at least one person who has one, and but it was real small. It was only like 3 feet diameter, and it spun at a really high RPM. My dream, it was 20 feet in diameter and only spun like at 200 RPM. But it was so huge. The mass of it was so huge that, I mean, I had never even known. I got up and I Googled flywheels as a way to store energy in homes because I'd never heard of this. It was just something that I think it came from God. I mean,
yeah, probably.
But and also there was this home. It was a home that it was like shaped like a saucer buried in the ground. And all the lights or the windows were around the higher end of the saucer because the rest of it was a bowl in the ground. And in the center was a fireplace. And it was just this crazy dream. And it was powered by and all of the appliances were powered by pneumatic power because you have this flywheel going and it can compress air, have all these air tanks that could compress. Yeah. And then you run your vacuum cleaner by plugging in the pneumatic. You run your blender by plugging it into the pneumatic air supply. And that was all in my dream. I mean, it was just very detailed.
Solid.
So.
Wonder what Tesla's dreams were like. He just woke up and was like, you know, I got it. I doubt it. I'm sure he was just banging around figuring things out. But
well, you know, they talk about Tesla or what's his name? Tesla founder.
Elon Musk.
Musk, yeah. I said Musk. They talk about, you know, used to be you wanted to be a specialist and you wanted to be the very best in your specialty. But we're now in the era of you can be a generalist and be pretty good at a couple of things, but you're the only person who is that good on those multiple things. That's what makes you stand out versus being the very best at a very narrow niche.
Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, and you know multiple things and nobody else knows can bridge across those fields. Very disparate fields that are unrelated, but you have those fields and you are pretty good. You're not the best in any of those fields, but you're pretty doggone competent. And you combine things, you can pull from these different fields of knowledge. What's that, sir?
I feel like I can relate to this.
Yeah, yeah. And that is the new mantra. That's what Musk is, they say. Musk is a pretty doggone competent in a number of fields, but not the highest level of any field.
Sure.
But that's not necessary. He knows enough to know what can be done, and then he can hire the best to carry out in each specific thing, but he's able to see the viewpoint. He's able to see the vision because he's fairly competent in these different fields. And so, I mean, if you don't know anything about guitar playing, I'm trying to think of an analogy. Help me out here. If you don't know anything about guitar playing, how could you design a better guitar? Or if you don't know how.
Sure. I mean, even the innovators were doing that. I mean, Leo Fender was taking the Telecaster to the country players of the day, and he had to have that interaction. I think Hank Garland, I believe, was the first Strat guy. That there was a close collaboration with Leo Fender and Hank Garland, that the Stratocaster was designed to be the perfect country guitar, and a lot of it was input from Hank Garland.
You know,
have that.
The thing about it is, and this has been discussed ad infinitum, but these designs that were developed in the 50s, the Les Paul, the Telecaster, and the Stratocaster, three guitars. The Telecaster and the Stratocaster were Fender, Leo Fender invented them.
Mm-hmm.
And the Les Paul was invented by, well, Gibson, which was a company, Orville Gibson, I think, was long probably passed away by the time they invented that.
Yeah.
Gibson started in the early 1904 or 5, and Orville Gibson was a luthier, but Les Paul, very famous pop singer with his wife, Mary Ford, invented the idea for the Les Paul. And now those three designs are pretty much unchanged 70 years later.
Especially the Telecaster, man. I mean, they had these slight improvements with the Les Paul from its inception into the late 50s. And the same thing with
the Stratocaster. True.
Ultimately, they put the five-way switch on the Stratocaster. But the Telecaster, man, they pretty much slam dunked that right off the rib. And
that was the first one they did.
Yeah. And you know, there's you can count on one hand that how many times mankind has had innovation that was so far ahead of its time that really
70 years later you still can't improve on it. I mean, it's the go-to guitar for country players.
Oh yeah, man. And rock, a lot of rock guys, a lot of blues
guys.
He absolutely knocked it out of the park with that innovation, man. Just completely.
Absolutely.
And it's the simplicity of it is the most brilliant part of the whole design. Fascinating. I mean,
from a practical standpoint, even from an industrial design standpoint, you know, there's a whole field of industrial design, you know, developing something that is aesthetically pleasing and functional and enduring, you know, functions well, aesthetically looks well, and it just endures. And there aren't very many things that fit in that category, but the Telecaster guitar definitely is one of the top.
Oh, yeah.
And the Strat and the Gibson, I would definitely, or the Les Paul, I would say.
Sure. It's the sum of the parts, man. I mean, I'm sure Parker guitars are functionally great guitars, but they're uglier than a mud fence.
Is that the ones with the upper bout that has a right turn on it?
Yeah, they're ugly, man.
Or a left turn actually makes yeah. well
depending. I know guys love them, but they're hideous guitars.
That's more of a metal guitar, right?
Yeah. So a lot of things have to come into play. You know, a lot of things have to be right.
Yeah.
That's why you should get solar. So if the power goes out, you can still plug in your amplifiers.
Yeah. And talking about amps, there is my there's three amps sitting there behind me. And I got two new acquisitions since our last podcast. A 58 Bassman, developed by Leo Fender, iconic amp, and a roughly 70 Silverface twin, Fender twin.
Great. And,
yeah. I've been toying with another Bassman. It's not, it's multis of thousands of dollars. I mean, it's not a cheap, they didn't make that many of them. And the price has been bid up. But this one was much cheaper than others that I saw on the line. But it arrived, plugged it in, it worked for about a minute or two, and then it cut out, just was cutting out a little, and then done. And the tubes still light up, but I'm a little concerned about it. But you're fairly confident that it's a pretty simple fix.
Yeah, tube sockets.
I hope it is. But, I mean, it got shipped from South Carolina.
It's almost always tube sockets.
You know, and, you know, who knows what the shipping company did to it on the shipping. So, and I reached out to the guy. He can't have a conversation without saying Mercury retrograde. Must be some hippie guy.
Yeah.
He said it like twice now in our email conversations. That was his explanation for why it failed when I got it, Mercury retrograde. And the other time he used it was when he didn't make the truck when he was trying to ship it to me. They didn't pick it up that day or something. He said, Mercury must be in retrograde. They didn't pick it up like they were supposed to.
Watch Mercury retrograde end and the amplifier work perfectly.
I don't even know what Mercury retrograde means. I know it's something to do with astrology, I guess, but... I just know it as
I'm sure it's a great amp, man. Once you get
Yeah. Well, the twin is just a whole nother level. And the other amp that's sitting there is a recent purchase of a Blues Deluxe reissue. But the main difference between those the older two and the newer one is the newer one is printed circuit technology. And the older two are still what they call point to point wiring. Which is its discrete components, resistors, capacitors. Everything is discrete. It's not printed circuit board. And the only companies that do that anymore are these boutique amp makers who charge a lot of money to still do the point-to-point wiring. Or you can, some of the, you know, like you can get a Vox point-to-point wiring that they do in China for a couple grand, point-to-point Vox. But, that supposedly makes a big difference. What do you think? Point to point versus?
I think it's all, I mean, every amp's different.
You know, so.
I don't really buy into the notion that one's slam dunk every time better than the other. I mean, I've played $300 Blues Juniors that sound as good as anything I've ever heard in my entire life. So it's all over the map, man. I think every piece of gear has its own personality. Kind of like guitars. There's no real absolutes, you know. Sometimes some of them are good ones and some of them not so much. I've played old Stratocasters that were garbage and old Gibsons that were garbage. And
yeah. Talking about my talking guitar gear. We talked guitar gear, I think, last time too, a bit. But, you know, I've got a Fender 72 reissue thin line made in Mexico. And just pickups just sound muddy. And know you told me the story about Carol DeCamp said, if you need a different capacitor, you need to just practice more. But I decided to buy some Lawler pickups, and they're still in the package downstairs. I got to put them in. But those wide range humbuckers, they're wider than typical humbuckers. That was a special, unique sound. And apparently Jason Lawler has gotten close to that. So I'm going to swap those out. The humbuckers that are in there are just regular humbuckers that they put in a bigger, I mean, it's really kind of fraudulent because Fender took the bigger opening, put a smaller regular humbucker in and filled it with wax.
Yeah.
So it's just a regular humbucker with the wide range humbucker enclosure. That's kind of misleading. Boo, boo, Fender. But they're a company. I mean, they're publicly traded. Are they publicly traded? I think they're publicly traded. They've got to meet price points. It's all about making price points. That are made in Mexico, guitar isn't going to retail for more than $600. And if it's retail for more than $600, you probably got to sell it to the wholesaler for $300, $400. You had a music store. You probably weren't even a Fender dealer. You probably weren't big enough to be a Fender dealer.
No. Our town wasn't big enough to have Fender. And markup varies, I mean, from item to item.
But a retail street price, not a list price, because list has nothing to do with what it goes for street. List probably might be $1,000, but the street price, everybody sells it at $600,
$599
or whatever it is.
Right.
So what?
As a rule, if you buy something at a music store for $1,000, the music store owner probably paid half that for it.
The Keystone markup is what they call that retail. Yeah. But I didn't know if that was the same in music instruments or not.
It is. Okay. That's why the mom and pop stores can't make it anymore, because Musician's Friend can buy, you know, 1,000 guitars at the same and sell them for less. That's why the mom and pop shops can't really do it anymore.
Which is a tragedy. But the only thing consistent with life is change.
That's right.
And
adapt, overcome.
Yeah. And the amount of any time we spend agonizing and complaining about how things aren't the way they used to be is time wasted.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to go back.
You just got to roll with the changes, man.
Yeah. So, well, we've entertained each other for over 40 minutes now.
Rock and roll.
So thank you, all of you.
Yep.
Thank you. Devoted followers of Jimmy D and the Wolf. We have merch. If you want a Jimmy D and the Wolf t-shirt, I should wear my Jimmy D and the Wolf t-shirt next time. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time every Tuesday at 8:00 Eastern Standard Time, 7:00 Central Time.
Peace.